This is Resonance 104.4 FM. Flipping marvellous. How you doing? Tis I, Nick Hennigan, coming at you again, as we say in the biz. Oh yeah, coming at you. I'm down with the kids, mate. On Resonance 104.4 FM and on BohemianBritain.com. And it's Literary London, where we look at things, well, you know, kind of literary and London-y. I'm in the pub tonight. Yes, you may be able to tell from the noise around me. That everyone's behaving, but I'm just going to have a little... It's not big and it's not clever, kids. That's my Coca-Cola. And the reason that I'm in the pub, it's called the Cross Keys, which you may know, I've talked about before, in Hammersmith on Black Lion Lane, is because we're kind of, yet again, although I know we did something earlier this month, celebrating the life and times of the Welsh poet Dylan Thomas, who liked the pint. Although, of course, he said that he used to come to London and he needed London for drinking and clubbing, but he found he wrote better in Wales. And this weekend, the Dylan Thomas Society, for the first time since the lockdown, are having a bit of a bash, I'm not sure if that's the right way of describing, a memorial service for Dylan Thomas at Poets' Corner in Westminster Abbey. And it's already happened, so you can't make it. Although if you'd like to know any more about the Dylan Thomas Society, they are online, of course, and you can get in touch with them at the dylanthomasbirthplace.com website, or discover Dylan Thomas. There's a lot of stuff around, just search it, you'll find it. But I thought it would be interesting to play something that you won't often hear, and that is Dylan Thomas talking live. Yes, reading his own works live, and some of his poetry is occasionally a bit dense. I mean, it's brilliant, but it's a bit dense. But some of his stories are rather amusing. And so I found this. It's from a recording made in, I think, the 1940s, perhaps early 50s. And it's Dylan Thomas basically being a reading on the radio. And as we're on the radio, on the wireless, I thought it was quite a good mix. Yeah. As always, if you'd like to get in touch, if there's anything you'd like to hear, or if you're organising an event, I should give it a shout now. Get in touch. It's probably radio@mavericktheatre.co.uk is the easiest way to get through. radio@mavericktheatre.co.uk. Although I've got a new email as well. Have you, Nick? Yes, I have. BohemianBritain.com. Nick@BohemianBritain.com. So, get me. Well, you can do in either way. And we're going to have another request show as well over the next couple of weeks. So if there's a particular bit of writing or poem or a story or a bit of music that you'd like to hear or like to dedicate to someone, then again, just drop us an email, radio@mavericktheatre.co.uk, radio@mavericktheatre.co.uk. And I'm also going to be talking, we're setting up a screenwriting group at the London Library in St James's in Mayfair. So I'll be giving you some news about that, not this time, but probably next time. I'm teasing you, eh? Teasing you. Yes, I am. Oh, yes. But in the meantime, here then is Dylan Thomas, literally in his own words, because it's him reading. And it's a short story which I think you'll quite like, whether you like Dylan Thomas or not. It's called The Outing.
Speaking personally tonight, we have the Welsh poet Dylan Thomas, who is going to tell one of his many stories.
If you can call it a story. There's no real beginning or end, and there's very little in the middle. It is all about a day's outing by Sharabang to Porthcawl, which, of course, the Sharabang never reached, and it happened when I was so high and much nicer. I was staying at the time with my uncle and his wife. Although she was my aunt, I never thought of her as anything but the wife of my uncle, partly because he was so big and trumpeting and red-hairy and used to fill up every inch of the hot little house like an old buffalo squeezed into an airing cupboard, and partly because she was so small and silky and quick and made no noise at all as she whisked on padded paws about dusting the china dogs, feeding the buffalo, setting the mouse traps which never caught her. And once she sleeked out of the room to squeak in a nook or nibble in the hayloft, you forgot she had ever been there. But there he was always, a walloping hulk of an uncle, his braces straining like hawsers, cramped behind the counter of the tiny shop at the front of the house, and breathing like a brass band, or guzzling and blustery in the kitchen over his gutsy supper, too big for everything except the great black boats of his boots. As he ate, the house grew smaller. He billowed out over the furniture, the loud check meadow of his waistcoat littered as though after a picnic with cigarette ends, peelings, cabbage stalks, birds' bones, gravy. And the forest fire of his hair crackled among the hooked hams from the ceiling. She was so small, she could hit him only if she stood on a chair, and every Saturday night at 10:30, he would lift her up under his arm onto a chair in the kitchen so that she could hit him on the head with whatever was handy, which was always a china dog. On Sundays, and when pickled, he sang high tenor and had won many cups. The first of the annual outing I heard was when I was sitting one evening on a bag of rice behind the counter under one of my uncle's stomachs, reading an advertisement for sheep dip, which was all there was to read. The shop was full of my uncle, and when Mr. Benjamin Franklin, Mr. Weasley, Noah Bowen, and Will Sentry came in, I thought it would burst. It was like all being together in a drawer that smelt of cheese and turps and twist tobacco and sweet biscuits and snuff and waistcoat. Mr. Benjamin Franklin said that he had collected enough money for the charabang and 20 cases of pale ale and a pound apiece over that he would distribute among the members of the outing when they first stopped for refreshment. And he was about sick and tired, he said, of being followed by Will Sentry. All day long, wherever I go, he said, he's after me like a collie with one eye. I got a shadow of my own and a dog. I don't need no Tom, Dick, or Harry pursuing me with his dirty muffler on. It's only oily,
Will Sentry said.
I got a bicycle. A man has no privacy at all, Mr. Franklin went on. I tell you, he sticks so close, I'm afraid to go out the back in case he sits down in my lap. It's a wonder to me, he said, he don't follow me into bed at night. Wife won't let, Will Sentry said. And that started Mr. Franklin off again, and they had to calm him down by telling him that Will Sentry didn't really mean it. Don't you mind old Will Sentry. No harm in old Will. He's only keeping an eye on the money, Benji. Aren't I honest? Asked Mr. Franklin in surprise. There was no answer for some time. Then Noah Bowen said, you know what the committee is. Ever since Bob the Fiddle, they don't feel safe with a new treasurer. You think I'm going to drink the outing funds like Bob the Fiddle did? Said Mr. Franklin. You might, said my uncle slowly. I resign, said Mr. Franklin. Not with our money you won't, Will Sentry said. Who put dynamite in the salmon pool? Said Mr. Weasley, but nobody took any notice of him. And after a time, they all began to play cards in the thickening dusk of the hot, cheesy shop. And my uncle blew and bugled whenever he won, and Mr. Weasley grumbled like a dredger, and I fell to sleep in the gravy-scented mountain meadow of uncle's waistcoat. On Sunday evening, after Bethesda, Mr. Franklin walked into the kitchen where my uncle and I were eating sardines with spoons from the tin because it was Sunday and his wife would not let us play draughts. She was somewhere in the kitchen, too. Perhaps she was inside the grandfather clock, hanging from the weights and breathing. Then, a second later, the door opened again and Will Sentry edged into the room, twiddling his hard, round hat. He and Mr. Franklin sat down on the settle, stiff and mothballed and black, in their chapel and funeral suits. I brought the list, said Mr. Franklin, every member fully paid. You ask Will Sentry. My uncle put on his spectacles, wiped his whiskery mouth with a handkerchief big as a Union Jack, laid down his spoon of sardines, took Mr. Franklin's list of names, removed the spectacles so that he could read,
and then ticked the names off one by one. Enoch Davis, aye, he's good with his fists, you never know. Little Gerwine, very melodious bass. Mr. Cadwallader, that's right, he can tell opening time better than my watch. Mr. Weasley, oh, of course, he's been to Paris. Pity he suffers so much in the charabang. Stopped us 9 times last year between the Beehive and the Red Dragon. Noah Bowen, very peaceable. He got a tongue like a turtle dove. Never an argument with Noah Bowen. Jenkins, Lacher, keep him off economics. It cost us a plate glass window, 10 pints for the sergeant. Mr. Jarvis, oh, very tidy. He tried to put a pig in the shara. Will Sentry said, live and let live, said my uncle. Will Sentry blushed. Sinbad, the sailor's arms, got to keep in with him. Old O. Jones. Why old O. Jones, said Will Sentry. Old O. Jones always goes, said my uncle. Cuthbert, Johnny Fortnite. Now there's a card, said my uncle, looking at the list again. He whistles after women, Will Sentry said. So do you, said Mr. Benjamin Franklin, in your mind. My uncle at last approved the whole list, pausing only to say when he came across one name, if we weren't a Christian community, we'd chuck Bob the Fiddle in the sea. We can do that in Porthcawl, said Mr. Franklin, and soon after that he went, Will Sentry no more than an inch behind him, their Sunday bright boots squeaking on the kitchen cobbles. And then, suddenly, there was my uncle's wife standing in front of the dresser with a china dog in one hand. By gee, I said to myself, if she isn't the funniest woman in the world, if that's what she is. The lamps were not yet lit in the kitchen, and she stood in a wood of shadow with the plates on the dresser behind her shining like pink and white eyes. If you go on that outing on Monday, Mr. Thomas, she said to my uncle in her small silk voice, I'm going home to my mother's. Holy mo, I thought, she got a mother. Now that's one old bald mouse of 105 I won't be wanting to meet in a dark lane. It's me or the outing, Mr. Thomas. I would have made my choice at once, but it was almost half a minute before my uncle said, well then, Sir Anne, it's the outing, love. He lifted her up under his arm onto a chair in the kitchen, and she hit him on the head with a china dog. Then he lifted her down again, and then I said, good night. For the rest of the week, my uncle's wife whisked quiet and quick round the house with her darting duster. My uncle blew and bugled and swole, and I kept myself busy all the time, being up to no good. And then at breakfast time on Saturday morning, the morning of the outing, I found a note on the kitchen table. It said, there's some eggs in the pantry. Take your boots off before you go to bed. My uncle's wife had gone as quick as a flash. When my uncle saw the note, he tugged out the flag of his handkerchief and blew such a hubbub of trumpets that the plates on the dresser shook. It's the same every year, he said. And then he looked at me. But this year it's different. You'll have to come on the outing too. And what the members will say, I dare not think. The charabang drew up outside, and when the members of the outing saw my uncle and me squeeze out of the shop together, both of us cat-licked and brushed in our Sunday best, they snarled like a zoo. Are you bringing a boy? Asked Mr. Benjamin Franklin as we climbed into the charabang. He looked at me with horror.
Boys is nasty, said Mr. Weasley.
He hasn't paid his contributions, Will Sentry said. No room for boys. Boys get sick in charabangs. So do you, Enoch Davis, said my uncle.
Might as well bring women.
The way they said it, women were worse than boys. Better than bringing grandfathers.
Grandfathers is nasty too, said Mr. Weasley.
What can we do with him when we stop for refreshments?
I'm a grandfather, said Mr. Weasley.
26 minutes to opening time, shouted an old man in a Panama hat, not looking at a watch. They forgot me at once. Good old Mr. Cadwallader, they cried, and the charabang started off down the main village street. A few cold women stood at their doorways, grimly watching us go. A very small boy waved goodbye, and his mother boxed his ears. It was a beautiful August morning. We were out of the village and over the bridge and up the hill towards Steeple Hat Wood when Mr. Franklin, with his list of names in his hand, called out loud, "Where's old O, Jones? Where's old O? We've left old O behind. Can't go without old O." And though Mr. Weasley hissed all the way, we turned and drove back to the village where, outside the Prince of Wales, old O Jones was waiting patiently and alone with a canvas bag. "I didn't want to come at all," said old O. Jones as they hoisted him into the charabang and clapped him on the back and pushed him into a seat and stuck a bottle in his hand. "But I always go." And over the bridge and up the hill and under the deep green wood and along the dusty road we wove, slow cows and ducks flying by until... "Stop the bus!" Mr. Weasley cried. "I left my teeth on the mantelpiece." "Never you mind," they said. "You're not going to bite nobody." And they gave him a bottle with a straw. "I might want to smile," he said. "Not you," they said. "What's the time, Mr. Cadwallader?" 12 minutes to go," shouted back the old man in the Panama, and they all began to curse him. The charabang pulled up outside the Mountain Sheep, a small, unhappy public house with a thatched roof like a wig with ringworm. From a flagpole by the gents fluttered the flag of Siam. I knew it was the flag of Siam because of cigarette cards. The landlord stood at the door to welcome us, simpering like a wolf. He was a long, lean, black-fanged man with a greased love curl and pouncing eyes.
"What a beautiful August day," he said, and touched his love curl with a claw.
That was the way he must have welcomed the Mountain Sheep before he ate it, I said to myself. The members rushed out bleating into the bar. "You keep an eye on the shara," my uncle said. "See nobody steals it now." "There's nobody to steal it," I said, "except some cows." But my uncle had billowed away, and I heard him gustily blowing his bugle in the bar. I looked at the cows opposite, and they looked at me. There was nothing else for us to do. 45 minutes passed like a very slow cloud. The sun shone down on the lonely road, the lost, unwanted boy, and the lake-eyed cows. In the dark bar, they were so happy they were breaking glasses. A shuny onion Breton man with a beret and a necklace of onions bicycled down the road and stopped at the door. "Quel un grand matin, monsieur," I said.
"There's French, boy bar," he said.
I followed him down the passage and peered into the bar. I could hardly recognize the members of the outing. They had all changed color. Beetroot, rhubarb, and puce, they hollered and rollicked in that dark, damp hole like enormous, ancient bad boys. And my uncle surged in the middle, all red whiskers and bellies. On the floor was broken glass and Mr. Weasley. "Drinks all round," cried Bob the Fiddle, a small, absconding man with bright blue eyes and a plump smile. "Who's been robbing the orphans? Who sold his little babby to the gypsies? Trust old Bob, he let you down."
"You will have your little joke," said Bob the Fiddle, smiling like honey. "But I forgive you, boys."
Out of the fug and babel, I heard, "Come out and fight."
"No, not now, later."
"No, now when I'm in a temper."
"Look at Will Sentry. He's proper snobbled.
Look at his willful feet. Look at Mr. Weasley lording it on the floor." Mr. Weasley got up, hissing like a gander. "That boy pushed me down deliberate," he said, pointing to me at the door. And I slunk away down the passage and out to the mild, good cows. Time clouded over. The cows wandered. I threw a stone at them, and they wandered, wandering away.
Then out blew my uncle, ballooning, and one by one the members lumbered after him in a grizzle. They had drunk the mountain sheep dry. Mr. Weasley had won a string of onions that the shunny onion man raffled in the bar. "What's the good of onions if you left your teeth on the mantelpiece?" he said. And when I looked through the back window of the thundering charabang, I saw the pub grow smaller in the distance and the flag of Siam from the flagpole by the gents flutter now at half-mast. The blue bull, the dragon, the star of Wales, the tulch in the wall, the sour grapes, the shepherd's arms, the bells of Aberdovey, I had nothing to do in the whole wild August world but remember the names where the outing stopped and keep an eye on the charabang. And whenever it passed a public house, Mr. Weasley would cough like a billy goat and cry, "Stop the bus! I'm dying of breath!" And back we would all have to go. Closing time meant nothing to the members of that outing. Behind locked doors, they hymned and rumpused all the beautiful afternoon. And when a policeman entered the Druid's tap by the back door and found them all choral with beer, "Shh," said Noah Bowen, "the pub is shut." "Where do you come from?" the policeman said in his buttoned blue voice. They told him. "I got an auntie there," the policeman said, and very soon he was singing Asleep in the Deep. Off we drove again at last, the charabang bouncing with tenors and flagons, and came to a river that rushed along among willows. "Water," they shouted. "Porth call," sang my uncle.
"Where's the donkeys?" said Mr. Weasley,
and out they lurched to paddle and whoop in the cool, white, winding water. Mr. Franklin, trying to polka on the slippery stones, fell in twice. "Nothing is simple," he said with dignity as he oozed up the bank. "It's cold," they cried. "It's lovely. It's smooth as a moth's nose. It's better than Porthcawl." And dusk came down, warm and gentle on 30 wild, wet, pickled, splashing men without a care in the world at the end of the world in the west of Wales. And, "Who goes there?" called Will Sentry to a wild duck flying. They stopped at the hermit's nest for a rum to keep out the cold. "I played for Aberavon in 1898, said a stranger to Enoch Davis. "Liar," said Enoch Davis.
"I can show you photos," said the stranger.
"Forged," said Enoch Davis.
"And I'll show you my cap at home."
"Stolen."
"I got friends to prove it," the stranger said in a fury.
"Bribed," said Enoch Davis. On the way home, through the simmering moon-splashed dark, old Jones began to cook his supper on a primer stove in the middle of the charabang. Mr. Weasley coughed himself blue in the smoke.
"Stop the bus," he cried. "I'm dying of breath."
So we all climbed down into the moonlight. There was not a public house in sight. So they carried out the remaining cases and the primer stove, and old Jones himself, and took them into a field, and sat down in a circle in the field, and drank and sang, while old Jones cooked sausage and mash, and the moon flew above us. And there I drifted to sleep against my uncle's mountainous waistcoat, and as I slept, "Who goes there?" Will Sentry called out to the flying moon.
That's great fun, isn't it? Dylan Thomas in his own words and The Outing. And I think anyone that thinks Dylan Thomas is kind of a little bit stick in the mud should just enjoy that. because I certainly did. And as I say, if you'd like to know any more about Dylan Thomas, then check out, as they say, discoverdylanthomas.com. It's a website that's been set up by his granddaughter, Hannah Ellis, who's a lovely lady. In fact, her son as well started writing poetry, I realised the other day. And if you do get to see the Ellises, then Trevor Ellis is obviously Hannah's father, and was married to Dylan Thomas's daughter, and is known to break into song at the slightest provocation, I'm glad to say. So they're a lovely bunch. And if you want to go back through the archives of Literary London, there was a period of time when we did the Dylan Thomas Centenary Celebration, which I should know, it was about 5 years ago, was it? 6 years ago. And Griff Rhys-Jones, who of course is another fan of Dylan Thomas, was the kind of figurehead behind it. And I spent a lot of time in Griff's kitchen in Fitzrovia, talking about being Welsh and Dylan Thomas and the seaside and poetry and stuff like that. So yeah, give it a listen if you fancy that. In the meantime, that's more or less all we've got time for. I know. It was great while it lasted, baby. But as I've mentioned before, we're going to be doing a request show probably next week, maybe the week after. So if there's anything you would like to hear, or more importantly, if there's anything you'd like to, or anyone you'd like to dedicate it to, I must say hello to Kathy California, who sent me an email again, which is why we're going to do another request show, because Kathy California, as you may know, well, you may not know, but Kathy California has been listening for a long time, and she always listens, according to her, down by the beach, because the sun never sets on Kath in California. So I haven't asked for photographic evidence, but then it's the radio, so what's the point? But anyway, hello, Kathy California. Thanks for getting in touch again. And also I'd like to say hello to Anissa, who is in Iran. She'd got in touch as well. Said, I like to listen every week, so if you could say hello to me, that would be great. Well, hello, Anissa in Iran. How you doing? And if you'd like to get in touch to say anything that you would like me to play, or song, or poem, or story, or a bit of music, as I say, then let me know. radio@mavericktheatre.co.uk is probably the easiest email. radio@mavericktheatre.co.uk. And I don't get into the studio very often, because obviously I have to come to a pub, in this case, the Cross Keys in Hammersmith, for the ambience, you understand. Hmm? Oh, yeah, it's for the... Oh, cheers. No, I'll have another drink of water later. Yeah, so, and if you've got a decent pub, we're actually going to bring out a book, hopefully in time for Christmas, called, it's rather embarrassingly, Nick Hennigan's Good Literary Pubs Guide. So if you've got any suggestions for good literary pubs, I've already made one with the Cross Keys here in Hammersmith, then again, let me know, radio@mavericktheatre.co.uk, or my new email, nick@bohemianbritain.com. I'm quite impressed. I've got my own .com. Yes. Are you sure about that? Yeah, okay. So thank you very much for your company. I'll see you next time. This is Literary London. I'm Nick Hennigan on bohemianbritain.com, but mainly, of course, on Resonance 104.4 FM.